This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good morning. This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 179 of Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. I am recording live from the Prairie Meadows Casino Racetrack and Hotel for the 2018 Iowa APCO Conference. And we've got a lot of stuff going on. There's not a lot of stuff going on in the expo hall yet. There's probably about 20 minutes or so before this place gets flooded. So I'm glad we're starting out this episode here earlier. And then after this, there's a couple of breaks. And then the first speaker will go on. And I met him. Greg's pretty cool. And hopefully I can get him on as well. But after him, then I will be doing the closing speech and or presentation, whatever you want to call it. And after that, we're going to be doing a live audience episode of Imagine Listening, as well as Within the Trenches Presents Open Mic. And Open Mic is where we're all going to be talking about the funny shit that happens in dispatch, the lighter side of 911. We're going to be talking about the stories that usually make, they end up online, or, you know, late night talk shows or radio shows and stuff like that. So it's going to be a good time. It'll especially be good because the first half of that is going to be Imagine Listening, where dispatchers stand up and tell their I Am 911 stories. And if they don't feel comfortable telling their stories, they can write it down and I will read it for them. And we just go on through there. So the first half can get rather emotional. But the last half of it, we're laughing our asses off. And that's how we end it, because we don't want to end it on a low note. And my guest and I already have been laughing in the beginning. I do have to say really quick that this episode is supported, as always, by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. And we're going to jump right in. So my guest today is Sheila, and she is with Buena Vista. God, I even said that when I was typing it out. I was like, I can say this. Buena Vista. Buena. Yeah, I'm Mexican. You'd think I'd be able to say that. I'm all tongue-tied. Buena Vista County, Communications 911. And you are also the Iowa APCO Telecommunicator of the Year. Welcome.
Thank you.
So that first part of the whole award ceremony thing, I didn't know this in the beginning, but Joe, he was saying that, you guys can come up and hand out the awards and stuff and get pictures. And I thought, oh, that's cool. But I didn't think about how emotional that first part was going to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, we're going through, they're doing the silent notes and all for those who have fallen over the years, those throughout all of public safety. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, is it going to be more emotional this one? We're standing up there. So, we're standing up there, Greg and I, and I've got my hand up to my lip because I'm like, hold it back, fool. Oh, man. But it was good. There was, you including a lot of team awards and other nominations and such, everybody being recognized. That's what it's all about. And, that's something that needs to happen more, I think. So, we're going to get into your story. So how did you start out in dispatching to begin with? Did you have family in public safety, or were you completely green when you went in?
I had no experience, no history, anything. My main connection would be my husband is an EMT firefighter. Mm-hmm. Just looked like something fun to try. And I figured I'd try it for a while. And yeah, if I didn't like it, I'd move on. And that was 18 years ago. So,
oh, damn. Yeah. 18 years. That's pretty awesome. See, I did it for 13 and a half years. So that's 18 years worth of stories and craziness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you do any ride-alongs or anything? I don't know if you guys can do ride-alongs with EMS at all, but I know once you get in there, or at least my old PSAP did, they let us do ride-alongs with fire, EMS, and police. So were you able to do a ride-along or even a sit-along in dispatch to see if it was something that you really wanted to do?
Before I decided if I was taking the job or not, I was able to sit in for a couple hours on a shift in dispatch. In the first part of your training, you do get to do ride-alongs with law enforcement. And at that time, we also did with the ambulance. There weren't any ambulance calls that day when I got to sit in, but none with fire department.
Oh, okay. So then what about in dispatch? Did anything happen for those couple hours? Because I know there were a couple times when I was in dispatch and I didn't do a sit along with my last PSAP or even with the first PSAP, but we would have people come in and nothing would happen. So they would sit there. They would say, this is easy. You guys are just answering the phone. And I would say, no, it's way more than that. You're not even seeing it right now. If it was a full moon that was going to be today, all hell would break loose.
Exactly. It was fairly quiet. They had, you know, some calls, nothing crazy. Yeah. Not super quiet.
You kind of
not
made it out
busy.
Like a bandit then.
Yeah.
So then when you go in for the hiring process, and what was that like? Did you have, you know, multiple stages of when you were going to get into dispatching, or?
There's multiple stages from as soon as you apply and then who's chosen to test and then just different stages in the testing process. So it takes a while before you find out, you know, and then it gets narrowed down to interviews and before you get hired. So
how did you do in your interview? Did they ransack you with questions?
It wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
Well, I ask because there's a lot of people that I've spoken to, and one of the interviews that I went to before I was at my last PSAP, it was like a 6-person panel. So I'm on one side of the table and all 6 people are on the other side and they're just firing questions at me left and right.
More like an interrogation.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It was nuts. So every person had their own list of questions. But once that one person was asked a question, everybody else was building on it. So, you know, you're going all over the place. And, you know, they're doing it to see if you can handle the pressure and think on your feet and stuff. But man, at the time I was sweating bullets and I already had like 3.5 years of dispatch experience, but I had never encountered anything like that before where I'm, you know, I've got the firing squad there.
That would be stressful.
Yeah. It was pretty nuts, but, yeah, so that's why I was curious if how the actual, you know, interview part of it went. I know at the last PSAP that I was at, and for those who are listening, because there's a lot of general public who are listening as well, it's a public safety answering point, otherwise known as the dispatch center. That's what the PSAP stands for, in case anybody is wondering. I forgot what I was saying. that's what I was going to say. When I was in there for my interview, I remember them telling me all this stuff and they said, do you have any questions? And I remember before I left for that interview, I said to my wife, I've got so many questions. I'm going to write them down on this little paper pad. And she goes, well, are you going to memorize them? And I said, no, I'm going to just pull the paper pad out and start asking questions. So we get to the end and they asked if I had any questions or anything. And I pull out this paper pad full of shit. And and I remember the both of them saying, oh, my gosh. All right. Well, it looks like you're interested. And I said, yeah. It was almost like they were going to stop me from asking my questions. I said, I want to read my questions. Right. I want to know about this stuff. So I was actually the only one that they ended up interviewing for that position, or the only one that made it out of all the people that was there. So I thought, I'm going to do this from now on. I'm going to pull out a booklet full of questions to show that I'm actually interested in this. So you get through the whole hiring process and all, and then you start your training. So what kind of training did you have? Because I know at my dispatch center, we had 4 phases. So there was, you know, phones and radio, and then there was I think I heard someone here call it their data or data, not data center, but data something. But it's pretty much where you do all your NCIC warrant checks, right, and all that other stuff. And then you're on main law enforcement radio. And then the 4th stage was called the shadow stage. So your trainer is just, you know, watching you, but not with the umbilical cord
right
attached,
yep,
to you. So what was your training like?
Our training is generally 6 months. You start off with, you know, learning your Iowa system, mm-hmm, and your logging and CAD. And then you work your way up to being on the radio. and you get to what you described as where you're working and you have your trainer there, you know, there to help you. They're there if, you know, you have questions, if something starts to head south, right. They're there to jump in, but you're doing what you can.
So from there, though, how many monitors are you looking at? Like, was that overwhelming at all for you, you know, getting
at
in there?
At that time, there wasn't that many monitors.
Oh, okay. So how many monitors
there
were
is,
there? So you had said that this was 18 years ago. Yeah, so how about that? Compared to 2018, so 18 years ago, how many, what is the tech like?
It's changed. The biggest difference would be what we had for a radio console at the time versus what we have now. You know, now we have the computer screen.
Right.
Then it was your panel of buttons and whatever you could reach to push the buttons for the different frequencies.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And this is, and that's just, that's 2000. I started in 2001.
Yeah. So and, I started fall of 99.
So, yeah. So then that whole thing, comparing to how, when I got my start, there was three screens. But they weren't together. They were big OCRT monitors, like the ones with the big backs in them. You know, nothing was flat screen, which is crazy to think that how technology has changed so much.
Yep.
But the radio that we had to put in like a 5-digit code in order to make the whole tone even go out for first responders or the fire department.
Wow.
Yeah. It was an older system. It was a small police department. But so just like you, yeah, you know, that technology, you know, completely changes. But so jumping in there, what about when you were first taking calls? Was that overwhelming or anything? Or were you pretty much, you know, I got this?
When we first started taking calls, our trainer was able to listen in. Mm-hmm. So you were kind of being guided, you know, and if you were missing something or you, you know, if they were catching something that you weren't, they would step in and just kind of prompt you on, okay, start thinking this way, start asking these questions. So it was a little easier knowing that they're listening to everything I'm listening to.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have multiple trainers, though?
You were with one trainer for a certain period of time, and then you would move on to another trainer for another area. Like, one would start you off with, you know, your CAD and your Iowa system. One would go for your call taking skills and stuff, and
Okay.
So you moved between a couple different ones.
Now, was it difficult to go between the two? And I asked because when I was in dispatch and in training, you know, we had multiple trainers, but for me, I was doing it one way, but then when I moved to the next trainer, they would say, no, you should do it this way. So,
right.
And then when I would go back to the first trainer, then I would get docked down, you know, certain points because I wasn't doing it right per se, but it was because I wasn't doing it their way.
Exactly.
And I thought, what the hell is going on here? Because I ended up finding a way to do it easier. And I thought, well, if I can do it easier and faster, shouldn't I be getting kudos instead
right.
for this? So
right.
That's why I ask if it was difficult going between trainers because, you know, people train differently.
Yeah. And at that time, I was only between two different trainers. Like, I went back and forth between those two. Now, we do notice with the ones who are in training, and they make the same comments. It's hard to go from one person to another because each one has their way of doing it. You can get to the same destination, different routes, but when they've been with this one for 2 months and you're doing it their way,
right.
Then they move to the next trainer. Like, well, no, I'd like it this way. You're still getting to the same endpoint, but then they're having to learn it your way. And in the end, they'll learn what's best for them out of each trainer.
Right.
But there's a difference when you go back and forth between each. But you can also learn stuff from each person, too. Whereas opposed to if you're with
true.
One person, you know, you're not going to learn certain skills or tricks that this one might know.
Right. Now, for those who are listening right now, the session has just ended. So we've got everybody flooding into the expo hall now, and you might hear some noise that's actually that noise right there. There's a game
it's
going.
Not us.
Yeah, there's a game going on. So we can hear it kind of loud in our headphones, but you won't be able to hear it that loud on the actual episode. So as I'm saying this, I'm thinking these people are probably listening and saying, you know, we really can't hear like maybe a little bit of what you're talking about. It just sounds loud for us because I have the microphones turned up as well as on the headphone amp. So, So that is definitely, something that I have found with dispatchers all over the place that's different when going through their training. You know, either they have one trainer or they have multiple trainers, and it turns into a pain in the ass because people want you to learn their way. It's like, okay, I'll try. But for me, I almost left. I almost quit because it wasn't just because of that, though. It was more that at that time, it didn't really seem like we were, like a brotherhood or family type like that. Because what they were telling us is that nobody is going to talk to you at all. And I said, okay, that's kind of weird. And they said, no one's going to talk to you because you need to learn all this stuff and it's important. And I said, right, but if I'm coming into a place where these people aren't talking to me, it's the perception is that they're dicks, I want this to be a team thing. And she goes, well, it is a team thing, but once you get past it. So I kind of understood, but I kind of didn't either, because I would turn and say, can you help me with this? And it was, looking for an emergency service number, ESN or something, mm-hmm. Just trying to figure something out on the map.
Right.
But, and they would say, I can't really help you. And I'd say, okay, well, still I understand that, but... And so for a little while there, it was kind of hard. I thought, oh, screw this. Maybe I'm going to go somewhere else.
Right.
But I stuck it out, and I'm glad I did, because here we are today.
Awesome.
Here we are, yeah. So what about some early phone calls? Do you have any early phone calls that you remember? And you know what? I'm going to move your microphone up just a little bit more there, because now there's even more people
there is.
Next to us. It'll be interesting to see how this one turns out. And I'm glad I turned down that microphone over there, because otherwise it would be even more loud. So good stuff. How about your earlier calls? Do you remember any of your earlier calls?
I do remember some of my earlier calls. I remember hearing what a blood-curdling scream sounds like.
Right.
Lady ended up being mental, so it wasn't, thank goodness, a legit emergency or... a problem at the time.
Right.
First fatality was a train fatality. That's one of them that's kind of stuck with.
Whoa. Okay, hold on a minute. It was a train fatality.
Correct. Yes.
So was it train versus car, or was it somebody who was like trying to commit suicide, or what was it?
Train versus vehicle.
Train versus vehicle. Okay. Wow. See, and that's... Those are the hard ones. Those are the ones, like you said, those are the ones that stick with you. When these calls come in, how did your agency deal with that? Was there a debriefing, or was it you need to go see the county counselor, or how did that even work out?
At that time, one of the detectives had said, if you need to talk, I'm here, since then, we've kind of evolved a little bit more where we do have debriefings that are, depending on your involvement in the call, mandatory for some, optional depending on, your involvement on certain calls.
Right.
Back then, you had an outlet to talk to if you needed to, but you weren't necessarily required to attend to briefings like the other units would.
Gotcha. Now, was it that you didn't have to, or was it because people didn't involve you? And I ask because it's the same thing that I hear at almost every dispatch center, because it was the same thing for my dispatch center where these, big events would happen, and we're the ones taking the calls. It starts with us. We're the ones there until they get there, but we're left out.
Right.
So did you ever deal with anything like that?
Yeah, there was times where it would have been helpful, and so recently when we've started doing the briefings, I was resistant at first until, after I'd been to a couple of them, that would have been helpful in the past on other calls, other situations.
I was going to say hopefully things start changing, but you know what? I have to take that back, because for the past year or so, it seems like dispatch is finally coming into the forefront and people are finally paying attention. And it's about time, man. It's about time.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, because... we're not seeing what people see, but, we're hearing things and you're still emotionally involved and, it does affect you and it is stressful and you need an outlet. Uh-huh.
Exactly. No, I completely agree. How about some of the lighter calls? What about the lighter calls that you've taken in your 18 years?
We had a facility in our jurisdiction, and we had one guy who would call regularly because he was missing his privates and wanted to be taken to this one location, along with the female that was also there that would call when her cigarettes were stolen.
Wow. Is that location that you're talking about where his privates were supposedly
They were both at the
located?
Same location. No. Well, they could have been connected. I guess it wasn't thoroughly investigated.
Right. It's all magnetic. It's just plop them up. Oh, man. Yeah. But
unfortunately, that facility is no longer open, so we don't get to talk to him anymore.
crappy. I bet there's always that comic relief, and as well as, you know, dark humor or anything that goes on with this job.
Completely.
Yeah. How about, let's see, what about any, like, animal complaints? Do you ever get any crazy animal complaints? Because I know we used to. We had, actually, and this wasn't even a complaint. This was a call where there was I'm pretty sure it was a trooper. He was going down one of the back roads, and he just yells over the radio. I don't remember if he yelled "Holy shit!" or what he yelled, but it was enough for all of us in there to freak out because, I mean, it's an officer over the radio yelling, so immediately, you know, your heart sinks. And it turned out that an emu jumped over his car.
Oh my God!
Yeah, he's driving by this place that had like this exotic zoo or something. Exotic animals, not zoo. They had exotic animals there, and, you know, people would go and visit and pay to pet them or whatever. And one of them got out, and he goes, I don't remember if he dropped an F-bomb, but he was like, a damn emu just jumped over my car. And we're like, what? So the emu literally jumped over the front hood of his car, like the opposite way. And he's telling us to get a hold of the people who own the place, and they got it wrangled up, but it was the funniest shit ever. I'll never forget that.
You can't make that stuff up.
No, you can. You can. That's what's so awesome about 911. You just can't make it up.
We have not had any emos, but we did have an officer that was on duty one day, and he responded to a dog call.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing we know, and this officer had put into for a canine shortly before this, next thing we know, he's on top of his squad car.
What?
He had to get up on top of the squad car away from the dog, understandably.
Yeah, of course.
But we're just picturing the officer. What's the canine standing on top of a squad car while the other dogs? Yeah. So they went and got the tranquilizer gun and came and helped him out. But
oh, man. See, that's funny stuff. The thing that comes to mind for me is there's this T-shirt that I've always wanted to get. But it's a T-shirt where this guy is on top of a car and there's like a zombie horde around him and he's shooting down. That's what I picture this officer, but just a dog.
Right.
They're not letting him get down.
It was bad as we're hoping one of the neighbors maybe got a picture of it.
Oh, right? Yeah. Put it on, you know, Facebook or something.
Right. Like,
you'll believe this. Like, oh, man. Yeah. Like you said, you can't make that shit up. That's the funny stuff. That's the lighter stuff in dispatch that people don't always hear about. Now, we're going to get into the second portion of this here, where I want to visit a call that you took for your Telecommunicator of the Year award. And there is a video that the American Heart Association...
Good job.
I know. Sorry, I didn't want to get that wrong, so I had to make sure to write it down. That the American Heart Association ended up putting together, and it was based off of this call that you did, which I think is amazing, and I'm going to make sure to share that all over the place on my social media outlets, but I'm going to play that here. It's just a few minutes long, and then we're going to kind of talk about the call that you took, that you got this award for. So let me pull that up here. So in the beginning of this, it says, "Time is critical when you're having a heart attack. Dan is living proof."
I just started getting pains in my chest. I thought something wasn't right, and it just got worse and worse and worse. I told my wife to call for an ambulance because I thought I was having a heart attack. And that's the last I can remember till EMS guys got here.
He was gray. He was clutching his chest, pulling at his arms hurt, and he had sweat dripping off of him, and he clearly was in distress. and he went over and sat down in his chair, and I called. Our neighbor arrived because it came over on his pager that there was a 911 call, and he, of course, knew the address.
I first walked in, I checked to see if he was responsive, checked for a pulse. At that point, he was very gray, had fixed pupils, and I knew we needed that quick.
His response time was within probably the first 2 to 3 minutes that the call was dispatched to our rescue. Two other guys, one of our junior firefighters and another rescue, came. The fact that they came that quickly, they're the ones that had to do CPR on him. They're the ones that had to move him and get him down to take care of him.
Upon our arrival, we were met by some of the firemen outside that said that they had done CPR. He did not look like the Dan I knew from being around the fire department for many years. Immediately, we got him up off the ground, put him on our cot, which was right in there, hooked him up to our 12-lead monitor, and was able to see on our monitor that he was having evidence of a STEMI or an ST, elevated myocardial infarction. We got a hold of Mercy Air Care out of Sioux City and decided to tier with them along the way to the cath lab instead of coming the 10 miles back to Storm Lake's local facility.
When I got there, they went right to work and put a stent in my wrist and opened it up, and I could feel the difference right away. I felt great after that. I hadn't felt this good in years.
Had I tried to take Dan over to the hospital on my own, he would have died on the way there. It all happened that quick.
Being able to call 911 and give us some symptoms and some presentation of the patient gives us an idea as responders what we're going to find on scene. It brings all of the resources right to their living room.
The sooner you can get aid, the better off the outcome is going to be. I'm a perfect example. The sooner I got it, the better off it was going to be. 911 call saved my life.
Oh man, goose pimples all over the place. So that again was a video by the American Heart Association, and that was created based off that call that you were a part of, that you took, which is amazing. And congratulations again for being the Iowa APCO 2018 Telecommunicator of the Year. So let's get into that call a little bit. I guess when it came in, I mean, of course, you act right away. But what was going on emotionally for you? Because I know, you know, we don't always show that emotion because we gotta stay professional for one and calm, cool, and collected and all, but in the back of your mind, there's stuff going on.
And this one was hard just because from the offset, names were given, I knew who it was, and how that related to, you know, our coworkers and such, and that's just an added level of urgency. Like, you want to make sure everything turns out okay. You want to get them all the help that they need.
Wow. Did you know them?
His sister-in-law was one of our dispatchers.
Okay.
In the past, their daughter at that time was one of our deputies.
So,
and he's a longtime firefighter for the community that he lives in. She works in the courthouse.
Okay. And that's why I was asking, because a lot of times, you know, those types of calls, if you know who they are, it makes it harder. So, I mean, you pretty much know who they are and stuff. So, I mean, you're dealing with that call. Did you get to meet them or anything afterwards, or is this one of those calls where
you just
get to see, you know, the aftermath? Even when you knew how the outcome was, but seeing this video out there based on your call, I mean, how does that make you feel?
It was good to see a good outcome. So thankful that, like, our deputy, that she was supposed to start back to work the next day. She'd been on deployment. And just knowing that she still had her dad. And just very happy for them.
Right. No, that's awesome. Now, going into the wrap-up of this episode, along with this call, what advice do you have maybe for any dispatcher who, you know, early on in their career, that, you know, looking at different calls that they might take, because a lot of people take from the stories that dispatchers give on the podcast. So when dealing with a call like that, you know, what advice do you have for people to just, you know, stay calm and get through everything that's going on?
You just kind of have to focus on your job. You have to set your emotions aside. That's easier said than done.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But that's good. That's good for people to know that, you know, you gotta stick with it all the way through.
And these calls happen, and you get through it, and...
That's 18 years right there. You know, 18 years of taking calls like this. And sometimes they become... not so much common, but, you know, they are calls that come in, but the same type of call, rather, but different situations. And even if it's a heart attack like this, anything can be happening around that that's going on. Not every heart attack call is going to be the same. So, you know, that's definitely good. Thank you very much for being on this episode. This was a lot of fun. We were laughing from the beginning. and I knew this was going to be good. And, you know, we've got Wheel of Fortune next to us as well.
We do.
So that's funny. So again, thank you. And I hope you enjoy the rest of this, this conference. And hopefully also during my talk, because we're going to have fun. You'll get to learn about all the shit that I went through as well.
Awesome.
So thank you again. And for those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that's going to be wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, and that's @911podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode is supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. And you can hear this episode, along with all the others, on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and thejabberlog.com. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.